This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. On the program this afternoon, our monthly show about computers, we take up this topic each month, usually on the third Monday of the month, but this month we're a week late, but we're going to do it. And Peter Kimball is with us this afternoon to help us through our Computers in You show. Peter Kimball is with the University of Illinois. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium. The consortium is called FAST3, located at the Center for Teaching Excellence. Listeners, if you've got a question, a comment, or a concern about computers, give us a call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a toll call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
It's good to see you. And we've got a listener all ready to go, all ready. And Jason Croft is going to tell us where he's calling, where he or she's calling from. Champaign, line one. Hi, you're on the air with Peter Kimball.
Hi, yes. I have a question. In lieu of a screensaver on Windows, there's a I guess it's a file or a folder where your pictures sort of cycle through like a scrolling kind of thing.
Yes.
And I inadvertently deleted this picture file and folder on Windows XP. And I'm wondering, is there any way to recover it? And if not, I do have all of the pictures that were scrolling backed up on CDs, but I don't know how I would put them back into the same kind of thing that would scroll through, so it's analogous to that screensaver folder.
Right. I would tell you in more detail if I had a Windows XP system here in front of me. Basically, it really was a screensaver. In fact, you can activate it from the screensaver dialog box. It is going to be named not one of the standard screensavers, such as the Starfield or the various other things. Or the scrolling text, and that should, if you can identify that, do you know where to find the screensaver settings on your...
I don't, but family members might.
Well, it's very easy to do. Find some blank area of desktop, click the right mouse button, a little menu will pop up. One of the choices in that menu is Properties. So you click on Properties, and then you have Display Properties.
All right.
One of the tabs there is Screensaver. Screensaver is really sort of a generic term, and screensavers as such aren't really necessary with today's technology. And in fact, machines that just sit there for hours at a time in screensaver mode are using up an amazing amount of electrical power across the United States.
Oh.
However, having said that, one of the options that you can specify for any of these screensavers, which activate themselves after a set amount of time, 10 or 15 minutes of inactivity if you haven't used the mouse or the keyboard, is these sorts of slideshows that you have seen. I don't know particularly which one that is. I don't use that on our systems that are still running. But you should see when you bring up that screensaver tab inside the Display Properties box, which you got by right-clicking on desktop.
Okay.
You'll see all sorts of options for other screensavers, many of them built into Windows XP, and there should be something there, and again, I can't see it on this system because it's an older version, that indicates slideshow or something that reminds you or kind of implies that it's that set of multiple images. And so from that, once you see what the name of that is, you can choose it. It may say, well, I don't have any folder available, but once you see what the name of it is, you can then do a Google search for that particular name, such as slideshow, screensaver, or whatever they call it, and you'll no doubt find early on in the Google list a set of pages that will give you the instructions on how to recreate that folder.
I see. Okay. Now, so you're saying, though, that if we put this back on, it's really just sort of wasting a lot of energy.
Well, Yes, if it's on, you know, overnight, for example. Uh-huh. The original idea of screensavers was early screens, if they had exactly the same display up for hour upon hour when it wasn't being used, those parts of the screen could, the phosphors and the things that actually glow in the screen could so-called burn in, and you'd have a faint image of what was on the screen, like the early video games on uh-huh. TVs where you ended up with a Pong set of Pong paddles that were always there in ghostly form. So the screensaver was designed to do random things on the screen to prevent that kind of burn-in. Today's screens don't really do that. A better setting as you're looking at that for most recent computer systems, even in the last 5 or 6 years, you'll have on that same page something that talks about power settings, and you can actually set the monitor to power itself off. Most modern monitors after 10 or 15 or 30 minutes of non-usage, which is a much better thing to do than to just leave it running the screensaver.
Oh, okay. Now, am I correct that once you put something in the recycle bin and click to empty the recycle bin, you cannot retrieve that?
You're mostly correct. Emptying the recycle bin does not actually delete the files. What it does is it marks that space on the hard drive as available for reuse.
Okay.
So the next time something is saved, it's probably going to overwrite that. If you deleted something and immediately realized it, there are software utilities from Symantec and other companies okay. that can unerase most of it. If it's actually a program, there's not a lot that you'll uh-huh. be able to do because getting most of a program back doesn't do much good. If it were a document or something, uh-huh. if you've lost the first page or two, you know, that's not as much of a disaster as losing the entire thing.
Okay, but there's really nothing you can do without going to some additional software or something.
Once you have emptied the recycle bin, that's right. true.
Okay, well, thank you for your help.
Uh-huh. Good luck.
Bye.
Next, we talk with a listener calling from Campus Line 2. Hi.
Hi. I have my computer is a PC, and it takes a long time to boot up in the morning. And I found by looking at the processes that are going on during startup that the SHSTAT.exe program is taking up all the time. It's running at 99% whatever and takes about 8 or 9 minutes.
And what was the that program's name again?
SHSTAT.
SHSTAT?
Yeah, and I looked it up on Google and some people say it's a virus and some people say it's from the virus protection program. And there doesn't seem to be any consensus on what it is or what it does and how important it is.
Well, it is, I just looked it up myself, and it is indeed from McAfee, which is a virus protection program.
Yeah, that's so the one I have on my computer.
Right. And what those programs will do, and it may not always be just that SHSTAT program. There are some others as well. When your computer first starts up, lots of things start happening. And this has been a recurring complaint about McAfee software. Among other things, it wants to go out, it wants to check to make sure that you have the latest software updates and the latest virus updates. And so what you can do is on your machine, and we don't have McAfee on this particular machine, I don't believe. Oh, we do, but it may be an earlier version, and I don't have permission to get into it. You can go into a McAfee virus scan console,
mm-hmm.
Look at some of the various settings, especially for scanning and updating, and in most versions, you can specify if you leave your computer on a fair amount of the time, you can specify that rather than doing a lot of that at startup, you would like it to do the updating at 2 a.m. Sunday morning or 3
okay,
in the morning.
Okay, well, mine says it's got a dial-up update, but I don't have dial-up, and it's got startup update, run at startup, auto update, run daily at 9 a.m.
Okay, well, the things that are running at startup are actually probably where you can try. What you don't want to do is disable the running of these things at any time because
mm-hmm.
then your virus scan software becomes out of date. But you could try just as an experiment. The one thing that you're probably talking about is enabling on-access scanning at system startup or words to that effect. And that's actually good because otherwise it's when you start it up, it's not going to be scanning for viruses. That doesn't mean it's going to do the whole update.
Yeah. So So on-axis scanner is enabled already.
Yes, and it should be, because that doesn't mean do the scan when you start up. It simply means from the time you start up, have the virus software active looking for viruses in any software that you access, which is the on-axis part of it. The other thing that you might want to take a look at is, or that you might want to research on, you know, via Google, in addition to looking up just the SH stat, is slow McAfee startup or slow SH stat. Try to go into a little bit more detail in Google and see if there are any particular solutions for that that might be listed there.
Okay. So, because
you're certainly not the only person who've had this. I've got a relatively slow machine I use from time to time, and I've learned that when I start it up, because it does do all the updates and it may be off for 3 or 4 days at a time, I just start it up and come back 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
The option is I can get it to start up very quickly if I tell McAfee don't bother to update yourself, but I don't like that option either.
Right. But if I already have an auto update set up, then I could take off the startup update.
Yes, in terms of the update. Don't disable the on-access scan, because
right,
that means
right.
when you access something, it'll check it for viruses. Mm-hmm. But the on-startup update could definitely be turned off as long as it's going to be doing updates at some other time. If you used your computer, turned it on, and then, you know, when you're done with it, turned it off so it never had any idle time at such time as you specify, then you would not want to disable on-update startup.
Okay. All right, I'll try that.
Okay, good
Thank
luck.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine, Computers and You, our topic this afternoon here on the program. Peter Kimball is with us this afternoon. He's with the U of I. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, which is called FAST 3. Listeners, if you've got a question, a comment, a concern about computers, give us a call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL.
It can be very frustrating when you've had a computer that starts up right away and all of a sudden you add some software or you do something else and then it looks like it slows to a crawl. Sometimes that's a result of a virus or some other kind of malicious software. But if it's at the startup time, usually, and it's happened after you've just installed some new software, it's usually another bit of software that says, hey, I'm pretty important and I ought to start myself up here early in the morning.
Yeah, we got a couple of callers who are getting ready to join us here, and we're going to get to them in just a moment. But I wanted to ask you, if you're in the market for a new laptop, and this is going to be your first computer, what should you be looking for?
Well, the first major choice you have to make is whether you're going to go in the Macintosh direction or the Windows PC direction. And that would probably best be answered by what you're already used to using at work or elsewhere. The basic parameters for any such machine, you don't want to outgrow it. You don't want it to have not enough memory or not enough hard drive space so that within a year or two you're finding that you need to upgrade it. That doesn't mean that you have to have the top of the line. In fact, except for people who are inveterate gamers and need the high-end extreme power, I always recommend people stay away from the top of the line because you're paying a premium for that two or three steps down. These days, the most important thing that you would have on a laptop is a good readable screen. You have to compromise between how portable you want it to be and how big a screen you wish to have. It's very nice to have a very lightweight portable, but it's also nice sometimes to have a 17-inch screen, which some laptops now have. The other thing is you would want to make sure that you've got plenty of what's called random access memory or RAM memory. And these days, 2 gigabytes would be pretty much the minimum. You may not use it all right away, but most operating systems, again, this would be true whether you're on a Macintosh or a Windows machine, would be useful. And you'd want to have adequate hard drive space. Probably the sweet spot for that now is any place between 160 and 320 gigabytes of hard drive space. It's hard to have too much hard drive space. It's hard to have too much memory. It's hard to have too much screen real estate available to you unless you want it really portable and move it around.
Okay, very good. Let's go to another caller now. A listener on a cell phone, line one. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions. First of all, I had an issue with my zone alarm firewall last week where I got basically into a recursive loop and could never get rid of error messages trying to uninstall and reinstall. And I fell back onto Windows Firewall. How does Windows Firewall rate compared to other firewalls? And then the other question is, do you, I'm thinking about going to a new laptop using Vista, but I've heard things about Vista and I like to wait for things to shake out a little bit. And I'm still using XP, but of course I have less RAM like you were talking about just a minute ago. So those are my questions and I'll hang up and go ahead and listen.
Okay, well, first of all, the Windows firewall is pretty limited. It's better than no firewall at all. It will prevent most programs that are external from making unauthorized connections into your system. But unlike Zone Alarm or the firewall that comes with the Norton Symantec security suite, it does not prevent programs once on your machine from phoning homes. So it's kind of a inbound firewall instead of a in and outbound firewall. Again, better than nothing, but either Zone Alarm or if you've been having difficulties with Zone Alarm, the Norton security suite would be another option, although it's sometimes difficult or inconvenient to change virus and firewall software protection midstream because you have to make sure you get the old one completely uninstalled. If you would like to go back to the Zone Alarm and you're into this difficulty with you can't ever quite get it uninstalled and the uninstall fails or it says it's not installed but other parts say it already is. What you can frequently do is go to one of the tech support sites such as Zone Alarm where they will give you some step-by-step instructions on how to manually get everything uninstalled if the automatic uninstall feature fails for some reason. And it's kind of a tedious, meticulous process to follow, but it will frequently take care of those sorts of problems. And then you just do a fresh install, and as far as Zone Alarm is concerned, it's never been on your system before. But the Windows Firewall, in the meantime, is pretty good protection. You've also, if you happen to have a home router where you've got multiple machines connected, maybe a wireless router, for example, especially common with DSL or cable modem connections, then you've got a little bit of hardware firewall protection built into that device by its nature. But that's pretty much that question. Let's see. The other question, I had started to jot this down, and then I got...
Oh, we're in trouble, Peter.
Well, we are in trouble.
I was communicating with my technical director,
well,
and I should have been paying attention.
I was jotting down a couple of thoughts on the Windows Firewall. It was the new laptop.
Oh, yes. Okay.
It was questions and Vista. About the new laptop and Vista.
Right. Okay.
Vista is starting to be adopted a little bit more widely now. The next service pack or the first service pack for Vista is about to come out, so Vista SP1 should be out relatively soon. And so if you have the option with a new laptop, as you do from some companies and some models, either Dell or HP or any of the others, you may still have the option, at least through June, of ordering one that has Windows XP built in.
Through June, okay.
That's the current date. Microsoft keeps pushing that back. Originally, it was going to be gone a year ago, and then it was through the end of December, and now it's through June, at least. You'll have that option. But with enough memory and hard drive space and with relatively standard software that you're using, Vista works pretty well. You'll want to have, not the slowest machine on the block. You definitely want to have, a middle of the road, maybe not ultimate top of the line. And the other advantage of getting a new machine with Vista is you're not going to have any of the difficulties with all of the compatibility with devices because the manufacturer, be it Dell, Hewlett-Packard, or any of the others, will make sure it's working as they send it out of the factory.
Okay, very good.
Whew. Yes.
Okay, let's take another call. Listener in Seymour, line two. Hi.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
I'm thinking about buying a new laptop. And I'm wondering between Windows and Macintosh, and then I have a back problem, so I want to keep it very light. And I've looked at a 12-inch Sony that weighs only 4 pounds. It seems like that would be very nice to carry around. What are the problems when you get as small as a 12-inch screen? And what should I put on this machine?
Well, like we mentioned with the last caller, and maybe one a couple before that, the basic question about whether it's a Windows or a Mac is, are you going to be more comfortable? Have you been using either Windows or Mac software?
I've been using Windows.
So there'll be a level of comfort there. If you've been using it for email and for browsing the web and for word processing, the Mac would be fine as well. You'll just have to get comfortable with some of the new Mac versions of the software. Both would be fine. The compromise that you have to face with a smaller screen, if someone, for example, needs to use bifocals or computer glasses to see information on standard size screens, the 12-inch laptops or the 12-inch diagonal screens are going to be a little bit smaller. They can still have very high resolution and get a lot of detail, but the text and such is going to be fairly small. You may be able, on most of these machines, to tell the laptop, no, I would like you to display things larger, but it's not going to be quite as clear as, in terms of sharp edges and such, as the laptop running at its built-in native resolution, as they say. And, of course, you won't have as much information on the screen if you tell it to present the text larger. So what you want to try to do is get to someplace, and you could go to one of the big box stores or elsewhere, and see what you think of the display of a machine with a 12-inch screen, and just see if it seems comfortable.
I've looked at the display. It looked pretty good when standing and you're at eye level with it.
Okay.
I was wondering if there was any disadvantage to it that I did not think of.
No, not really. The smaller screens actually will tend to draw less power, but the smaller laptops typically have less power available, so that works out. If you're comfortable with the resolution of the screen, and you can also check a number of laptop companies make screens with a couple of different qualities, and one of those qualities is if you are not quite looking directly at it, if you're looking at it off-axis a little bit, maybe down a little bit towards it or up a little bit, is it still just as clear? And you can check that as well. All of them are going to be very clear when you're dead in front of it looking straight on, but what about at an angle? But other than the size and the lightness, which is, as you say, an advantage, there's really no other concerns.
Okay, sounds good. So, any other thing that you would suggest?
Have plenty of memory in it, RAM memory. It's worth paying a little bit more generally to get adequate memory. Most machines would come with a minimum of 1 gigabyte. That's really barely adequate now.
What should we have?
Well, 2 is best for future usage. 1 would be fine. Anything less than 1, I don't even know if they're being sold now. Anything less than 1 is completely unacceptable. 2 gigabytes would be fine, and you may well be able to cut a deal getting 2 gigabytes in advance rather than getting a gigabyte now and discovering that you have to update it later on.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Okay, good luck. Next we talk with a listener in Forest, Illinois, on line 4. Hi. Line 4?
Is this Forest?
Yep, that's you. Hi.
Hi. I have 2 PCs, and I have Virus on them, one AVG and one Norton. My wife has a new Mac laptop, and we got it at Connecting Point in Bloomington, and they told us that you didn't need to get a Virus on it, a Norton. I've got one at home, and they said not to put it on. What do you say?
I'm not familiar with the Norton product for the Macintosh. However, you're living dangerously if you are running Windows or a Macintosh without any virus protection. The vast majority of viruses and malicious software are indeed targeted towards Windows systems, particular towards Internet Explorer, because that's where most of the machines are.
Okay.
However, there are indeed in the wild a number, not as many, but a number of Macintosh-specific viruses that are targeting specifically Macintosh OS X, and Mac Apple does regularly release security updates for their software, just as Microsoft does. There are some websites that have been identified, including some pages that have been hijacked, for example, on Facebook and MySpace, but other websites as well that have intentionally malicious software on them so that anybody who visits those sites can be infected if their system is either not fully updated or if it doesn't have some kind of antivirus software installed. So I would disagree with the folks there. I would say you definitely want to have some antivirus software installed, whether you're running Windows or the Macintosh.
Okay. Well, I ordered a Norton utility for the Mac, and it came, and it was 2004. And someone said that they hadn't updated that for a Mac until just recently. So I thought I'd download, you know, an upgrade on the 2004, and I was going to do that, and then it was another $75. So that's where I'm at. I don't know whether to put the 2004 on in it or not.
Well, without actually checking out the Macintosh antivirus site at Norton in detail, and I see that their current version they're listing is what they call antivirus Norton Antivirus 11 for Mac. They're not.
Yes.
There are a couple of things to say about the older antivirus software.
Okay.
And this would be true on Windows as well. Yes, you can, for example, someone on Windows who has Norton Antivirus 2005 or has perhaps something as old as 2004 on the Mac, as long as you keep the antivirus definitions updated so that it's not running with 3 or 4 year old definitions, then you're for the most part protected. However, having said that, there are some new kinds of attacks that are being formulated by those who write such things that some of the older software don't know to look for, no matter what their definitions are.
I see.
So if you're more than 2 or 3 years old, and again, without looking this in detail on, for example, Norton's site, I would strongly consider going with the more recent package, because four years old for the underlying software or 5 years old is pushing the edge a little bit.
I know. Okay, well, I ordered it hoping that it'd work, and there was no indication that it wouldn't. But when I got it, I saw the 2004, and I figured that was too old. Maybe I should just put an AVG in the Mac, too.
Well, what I would do, and again, before I were to pick one of those or the other, is just go to a Google site and type in something like review Macintosh antivirus or review Norton Mac, AVG Mac, and see what others have said.
Will do. Thanks a lot. Good program.
Great. Thank you.
Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling about Microsoft Excel on Windows. Is there any workaround for opening up two separate Excel windows? They have this sort of link system, so you can't have two independent worksheets open.
I am not a heavy Excel user, so if you try to open, you want to open two XLS documents, Excel documents, and if you open one of them and then tell it you want to open the other, what you would like to try to do is have them both available on the screen at the same time, is what you're saying?
Well, they have them, but I mean they have them like as like above and below and is part of a setup system as opposed to having two visually independent worksheets.
Well, one thing you can try, and I, again, can't tell you about the details with this. Let me see if they've got... no, they don't have any of that software on here, I don't believe. Nope. Maybe. Let's see what I can find here. One of the things you can try is experiment with the... the Windows Minimize and Restore Down buttons up there in the top right corner. Not only for the entire Excel program do you have those three buttons to reduce it to just the taskbar or to close it or to so-called restore it down, but you can also do that if you have multiple files open. So if I say I want to open two separate workbooks and I reduce one of those to a smaller size, it may be possible to bring those separate books in. I have not yet tried that, however, on... So let's see. They are going to be, I suspect, in the same overall Excel window. I don't know that you can bring them into separate Excel windows.
The mind boggles.
Yeah, I'm not, again, I'm not an Excel user. I would fall back on the standard advice, do a Google search for Excel open two windows and see what you can find. I know that in many other programs these days, in order to save space, it's treated really as the Microsoft Excel program is only running once and you've got two windows within that one large Excel window, and I suspect that that's the default behavior for your version as well.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Next, we talk with another listener in Urbana on line 3. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes. Recently, I thought I was going to, I had to reinstall Front Page and had a little trouble finding the disk. I filed it in the wrong box. And I discovered online that Front Page is no longer being manufactured by Microsoft.
That's right. The last version is Front Page 2003, and when Office 2007 came along, Front Page officially ended its life.
Any recommendations on the replacement? I see there are two. One looks as though you have to be running a server.
Well, the although it's not really an update to Front Page, the program that is most similar to Front Page is something that is called Microsoft Expression Web.
I noticed that.
Expression Web does not require a server. In fact, Front Page itself does not require a server just to do the development of web pages. Eventually, you need a server someplace where you're going to be sending your pages to.
Yeah.
But Expression Web has gotten extremely high reviews, better reviewed slightly by PC Magazine, for example, than Dreamweaver, which is its major competition. Much of the material and the layout of the screen that you will see in Expression Web will be familiar to you as a former Front Page user.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that, very briefly, Microsoft ended the Front Page is it did a lot of non-standard, non-compliant, standards-compliant things behind the scenes, and they just want to do a clean break from that, and so it's now completely standards-compliant, something called CSS for cascading style sheets. So the Expression Web interface will look a lot different when you first open it up, but there will be little hints and reminders and nostalgic bits that are very much like Front Page was.
And it's much more standard then?
It generates code that is much more standard. Some of the things that you could do in Front Page that were just, I mean, they were kind of clever and kind of cute, but they weren't really standards-based have been eliminated from Expression Web. However, any of the those things that are in your web pages, Expression Web will leave them alone. You just won't be able to, you know, add more of them or change them in particular.
Well, the web page I'm principally interested in, I tried to stay away from cuties.
Well, then you're probably all set. I would give that a look. You can actually, like much software, get a downloadable version of that for a free trial evaluation. But even especially if you have access to academic pricing, it's very inexpensive, even if you want to buy it. But it's Expression Web is the software that you want to look at. The other option would be Dreamweaver, which is going to be a whole other learning curve for you.
How do you like them, comparing them?
I like both of them. In fact, I use both of them. I use Expression Web for site management and now for some of the CSS stuff. I use Dreamweaver for especially for some of the websites that are already created and dealt with in Dreamweaver. There are... if you do a, you know, I sound like a broken record perhaps, but if you go and do a Google search for Expression Web versus Dreamweaver, reviews, Expression Web, Dreamweaver, you'll actually get a few places that do much more of a comparison than we could certainly do now on the air.
Well, that sounds the way to go then, probably would be with Expressions. when I do upgrade. I did find the CD, so I've reinstalled FrontPage. And,
okay.
I did have another question. I have an older computer with a two-year-old motherboard, and I updated it to the, I think it was the fastest of the AMD CPUs when I did that. But I've only got a half a gigabyte of memory in it. There's an open slot. Could I put a gigabyte?
What you'll want to do is check the website of the motherboard's manufacturer. Some motherboards require that if there's an open slot and it's a memory slot, chances are that you'll be able to put in a gigabyte there, but you need to make sure that the system can handle it. Probably it can. If there's only one memory module in there now, then that would mean that the motherboard is probably one that does not require it be installed in pairs. But I would simply go to the website of the motherboard manufacturer and look to make sure. But chances are you'll be able to do so. You'd also find... Go ahead.
Actually, it has two 256 megabyte SIMs, but I think they just put those in because it was cheaper when I requested a half gig.
Sure. But the question is, if you went it up to a gig, it might require that that goes in the form of two 512s. Some motherboards require for best performance that memory be put in equal pair modules.
That's what I'd heard in the past. I was wondering if I remembered correctly.
Some do and some don't. Some motherboards require that, some don't, and that's why you would need to check the manufacturer's website. Another site that you can try checking, if you know this is the if you know the model number, is to go to crucial.com. It is a site that's frequently used to identify memory. In fact, if you're running a Windows system, go there, and there's a little downloadable software program that will examine your system, and if it recognizes it, say, here's what your options are. www.crucial.com.
And that's spelled with a C?
Yeah. Like crucial to have enough memory.
Yes. I thought sometimes people try doing things like K's.
Nope. Just plain old crucial this time. So
good luck with
that then.
Good luck. Okay, good. Let's take another call now. A listener on line 2 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to share some thoughts about computer screens. My mom just recently bought a nice new Apple computer and then discovered that she had dry eye problems. And I was reading that one of the things that's helpful is to lower the screen so that your eyelid covers your eyes more. But with the Apple, you can't lower the screen. You can tilt it, but you can't lower it. So what we ended up doing was modifying the top of her desk, which was a built-in thing, so that her whole screen could be down about 3 inches, and that seems to be helping. People have talked about carpal tunnel syndrome for not having the keyboard in the right place, but you can also get problems if you have to crick your head so that your glasses work with your screen. So it's really kind of complicated. One thing that we've done is to, we have laptops here, is to get an extra monitor so that if we want to see something big or do multiple things, the extra monitor can stay here and it does good things, but you still have the flexibility of being able to take the laptop with you someplace else.
Yes, and most laptops now support dual monitor setups, so that's a pretty good solution. And a lot of people don't think about the issue of viewing the screen other than its size, so those are good points. Thank you very much.
Right.
Thanks for the call. Next, we take a listener's call from Bloomington, Illinois on line 4. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I have a quick question about your earlier comment on viruses on a Macintosh, and I just wanted to expand a little bit about that. Are you saying that there are actually viruses out there that can affect a Mac like a virus can currently affect a Windows operating system? Because I'm not aware of any.
There are. They are not nearly as widespread and as nearly as common. But if you want to read some about that, you can go to one of the virus, of course there's slight self-interest here, but you can go to one of the virus manufacturers, antivirus manufacturing sites such as Symantec, or you can go to the CERT, Computer Emergency Response Team Advisory site, or do a search for Mac viruses. And
well, yeah, I did that while I was listening to your program. I just don't see that at all. I mean, I don't see any virus out there currently that can actually affect the Macintosh operating system to the same extent, or even to any extent, than the same way a Windows machine can. And the OS X operating system has a lot of security features that prevent viruses even from installing themselves. So I guess I'm just not sure where... that information is getting out there.
There is one of the Apple has been very good at releasing frequent security updates for the Mac OS. There are, and by virtue of that, it's sort of an admission that no software is complex as an operating system, whether it's Windows or the Mac OS, whether it's especially OS X, which is much more complex, can never be 100% free of potential problems. But you are certainly safer in terms of the likelihood of getting a virus with a Macintosh, but not having any virus protection and saying, here I am, come and get me, essentially, is... You're going to get away with it for a while, but the chance, and maybe forever, but the chances are that at some point may be a problem.
Isn't it true, though, on a Mac operating system, the inherent to the operating system is the inability for applications to install themselves in the background like it is on the Windows system? I guess my question is, if you're putting an antivirus application on your Mac just because you think something will happen, doesn't that really use up a lot more system resources than is truly necessary?
Well, it's certainly going to use some system resources, and there are not many antivirus software. There are not many Mac viruses that are common in the out in the wild, as they say. But sometimes it's not necessarily just a virus. It might be malicious software that antivirus software can also stop, such as spyware and such. The case in point was, I think it was Melissa Etheridge's MySpace or Facebook page, I can't remember which, had a Mac-targeted virus that would, if somebody visited it using the Safari and possibly Firefox browser, would install itself and would cause, I don't recall the precise details of what it did. So you're right in that there are seldom... wild infestations of Macintosh viruses, never wild, wildly popular ones, but there is still no built-in immunity because that would imply that the underlying Unix kernel of the Macintosh operating system was written with absolute perfection, and that's just not possible.
Okay. I want to thank the listener for his call. We've got one caller left waiting, and I want to get to this one last individual. We don't have a lot of time left, maybe 2 or 3 minutes. Line one, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, two quick questions centered on, I guess, appropriate technology. I've got a laptop 2-3 years old, runs XP second SP2. It's absolutely fine, perfect, powerful enough for what I do. How long would you say, could you make a guess, how many years will it be, if any, until they obsolete this thing? I'm perfectly happy running the programs and versions I do now.
Microsoft actually has a policy about how long software will be supported after it's declared to be no longer available. You have several years. I don't recall what it is, but from the time they announce the end of life of Windows XP, which has not yet happened because they keep extending it. Support will be available for another 2 years after that, and security updates and patches for another 3 or 4 years after that. So,
you think probably at least if I want to get 3 more years out of this and it's adequate for my computing power needs, I should be okay.
You should absolutely be okay. Just make sure you keep it updated with the software updates and patches and such as they come out for Microsoft.
Second quick question. I have a hard copy portfolio of pictures of my craft work. All I want to do is be able to get that portfolio contents, the picture, and maybe a brief caption for each picture onto a web domain that I've bought. Short of going the whole nine yards money and learning curve-wise with Dreamweaver, is there some other relatively simple and inexpensive program that will achieve this album creation goal I have?
I believe that Photoshop and Photoshop Elements have a web gallery feature that you could look into. And they will prepare a set of files that you could then upload using whatever software is available from your web hosting provider. So there are some other options. Also, both Dreamweaver and Expression Web have various templates that you can get and essentially plug your material into, and you can find a lot of that by going to either the Adobe site or the Microsoft site to the Dreamweaver or Expression Web locations and looking under forums or user communities, links of that sort for those kinds of solutions where you can really just plug it in and not worry about the underlying detail.
Yeah. Our technical director, Jason Croft, suggests Flickr.
Flickr, which would allow you, that's a good site to take a look at. However, the problem there is that's not going to be your own website. That would be at a site where people could come and look at it. But Flickr, spelled without the final E, Flickr, or Flickr, is definitely something you should look at if you're not aware of it. But it's not going to be under yourdomain.com.
Okay, there we've got to leave it. And our thanks this afternoon to Peter Kimball. And we will do another Computers and You program next month on the third Monday of February. So happy Groundhog Day.
Happy Groundhog Day and
Valentine's Day.
And all the other holidays. And I'll see you again in March.
Okay, we'll talk with you round about St. Pat's Day.
That's true. Got all these holidays.